is The Fantasy Show with Show Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you. Fantasy football season is, for the most part, over, I think. As we tend to say, friends don't let friends play for a fantasy championship in week 18, and I think most leagues are like that. So as such, the fantasy season has largely been concluded. As such, today we won't be doing start sits for every game, but more looking back on what has been a long season. Congratulations to you if you won a title this year. If not, we will see you back here in September to do it all over again for the 2023 season. Matt, let's do some final accounting to start the show. A little later on, we'll get to look back on our top 12s. We had the top 12 lists published via the podcast and via social media back in like the end of August and so on. So we'll get that, kind of do some looking back. I'll just say this. I was woefully wrong on some, very right on others, but just Kyle Pitts. We'll talk about Kyle Pitts, I'm sure, today. But we'll do some accounting. And I'm curious how you finished your various seasons. I know you're in like in a million different leagues. I'm in five leagues. I made the finals in two of them. I will admit on my end, thanks to a very healthy dose of luck, I won a title in one of them because I started Mike Evans after Evans rode the bench for, I want to say, maybe, I don't know, like the last 6 or 7 weeks. And I mean, I talked to you about this a million times, but how I've always felt Mike Evans is so talented, but he kept getting pulled down for like 60-yard touchdown pass interference calls. And I don't know. I basically only started Mike Evans in the end because I wasn't feeling good about starting Cortland Sutton and relying on the Denver Broncos in the championship. So thanks to a healthy dose of being terrified, I won a fantasy championship on the backs of Mike Evans and Davante Adams. The other one went the way of the dodo because, funnily enough, I felt comfortable about starting Justin Jefferson. So that just proves, I think, in the end that it is a lot of it, especially in the playoffs, does come down to luck.
It certainly does. And I mean, I don't think anybody saw the 10 catches for 207 yards Ooh. And 3 touchdowns from Mike Evans. I believe both you and I had him as like a wide receiver 3 flex play last week.
Yeah.
And for good reason. I mean, listen, if you played him in your flex and that's what you got, I think you're pretty happy about that. But I mean, even the Justin Jefferson line, I was at my parents and I had just glanced at the score of the Packers and Vikings game, and I went, I don't need to watch that. Let me just keep the San Francisco-Las Vegas game on because I also had money riding on it, and that's a different story. But I then looked at the stats in that game, and I'm like, Justin Jefferson, 0 catches until I believe it was late in the third quarter or maybe early in the fourth quarter. And, I mean, if you – And this is it happens. And I said it on the show. I said there's no way that the Packers didn't learn from their previous Justin Jefferson experience, which was 9 catches for like 183 yards and 2 touchdowns. But I didn't see that type of regression. Like, come on, that's next level Justin Jefferson shutdown. But it again goes to your point. This is why when we do this show, our opinions are informed. But at the end of the day, the player's got to play the game. And in that case, Jair Alexander did an incredible job on Justin Jefferson. And dare I say, probably cost a lot of people a fantasy championship because you're expecting in that type of a game, I don't know, 18 to 20 points from Justin Jefferson. And you're pretty comfortable with that number. My goodness, that didn't happen. And it goes to show you that the smartest people can say the smartest things and still be wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of pretty reliable players who in the end didn't really do all that much. I mean, like, I know if you started, let's say, I don't know, Juju Smith-Schuster is probably a bad example because I think he has been a fine player and he got more reliable as the season went on. But if you started him and you hope for more from, let's say, the Kansas City offense, from guys like not named Jerick McKinnon, then you probably didn't get a lot, even from Travis Kelce, for example, right? Like if you started other players as well, like, I don't know, maybe you did start the Seattle defense, right? That was a defense that ended up with like 15 points depending on your league setting. So it is a bit of a crapshoot. So I am very pleased for those who won a championship. I freely admit mine came down to some stone cold luck, but hey, in the fantasy, the way I look at it is, I think in the end, Matt, when you look at the fantasy football season from the beginning, from like your draft in the off season, like right before the season starts, I like to draft as close to the season starting as possible. So if like this Thursday night season opener is the first week of September, we'll draft like the day after Labor Day or something in a bunch of my leagues, for example. Sometimes it can't be helped also, right? That's just like the way it is being an adult and you have other obligations. Sometimes you have to draft in the second or third week of the preseason, even though I don't love that, but it happens. But from that point all the way to the end of the fantasy regular season, I think there is some degree of skill in the sense that, you know, over time, most fantasy managers who are quote unquote skilled will probably make the playoffs. But once you get into the playoffs, like it is a 1000% crapshoot. Like you can come to these shows and get the advice. And I think more, and again, you're operating with informed decisions. But I mean, again, to use the Justin Jefferson decision, or I don't know, who could have possibly seen the result between the Bills and Bengals happening. And I'm very pleased that DeMar Hamlin seems to be much better now, and he's had the breathing tube taken out, and he's talking to his teammates, and I think he posted something on Instagram. So it's all fantastic, right? It's great to hear that he's doing well. But that the game was canceled and that there were fantasy championships probably completely ruined in the sense that you didn't get Joe Burrow's points in the end, or you didn't get T. Higgins points in the end, or you didn't get Josh Allen's points in the end, or Stephon Diggs points in the end, or whomever. Or maybe you got just enough to push you over and it went back to a zero. Like there were a million different scenarios that happened because of the result of Bills Bengals in week 17 that I'm sure changed the outcome of many championships. And if that's not just silly luck, then I mean, I don't know what is.
Yeah. And that, like, that was, we've never seen that before,
right?
Like that's never happened in our lifetime. It's never happened in the NFL. And my sentiments go out to DeMar Hamlin and his family. Like the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of time here, but it sounds like he's going to make a full recovery, to me, is the most important part of the conversation. You know what I did notice, show, is that we did see the worst in people after that.
Oh
happened.
My goodness.
We saw the best in people. DeMar Hamlin's charity that raised, it's now over $7 million on the GoFundMe. It's like $7.5 million. He was asking for $2,500. Like that to me is the good. And then the bad was like, they need to play this game tomorrow. And they like, could you, the best example that I could give is one that I saw on Twitter. And that was, could you imagine that you're in a meeting and a coworker has a heart issue and their heart stops and they need CPR and they need a defibrillator right in front of you at your work, and your boss says, okay, we're back at it tomorrow, as if nothing happened.
Yeah. Or in five minutes,
which is a totally different conversation. And this is why, and I know I'm getting on my soapbox a little bit here, but I feel like this needs to get out there. This is why whenever there is labor strife, you always cheer for the players, because at the end of the day, players are just commodities, and the owners and management staff don't necessarily care. And that's not in all cases, but in most cases, you are a commodity. So make as much money as humanly possible while you can, and that's it. And that's why I always side with the players, because the owners have more money than God, generally speaking. And like I said, they don't necessarily care about the well-being. In this case, the Buffalo Bills, they do. There was a report today, and I think it was either Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport. I don't know. They're both great. So one of them had it. And they said that DeMar Hamlin actually had a clause in his contract that stated that if he went on the IR, that he would be paid a lesser salary. And the Bills, they went to the PA, went to the NFL, and said, we would like to pay him whatever his full salary is while he's on the IR, and both agreed. So there are good in people, but the bad was, how about my fantasy championship? A man literally died on the NFL field, and you're worried about your fantasy championship. I did see some leagues actually show that they decided, we're just going to donate whatever the pot is to DeMar Hamlin's GoFundMe. I saw that. I saw just splitting the pot for first and second 50-50, and then third place, whatever. So people got creative with it. My suggestion, if people ask me, was take the points per game of the remaining players and add them to the total, because that's your season average, and then that's how you decide it. I know it's not the most fair way, because it could be a lot more, it could be a lot less, but to me, if you wanted to quote-unquote play it out, that was probably the best way for me.
Yeah, I think there was probably no good way to resolve the situation, right? Like this probably like a least bad way, perhaps, is the best way of looking at it. Like, I know, for example, I mean, like, in some situations it was like no-brainers, right? Like, for example, Vic, who is the former op of the fantasy show in our work league, Vic ends up being he's the champion of our 14-team league. So congratulations to Vic. But Vic, for example, in that league, going into the Monday night game, his opponent had no players left. He was up by 30 points, and he had Stephon Diggs left. So I am the commissioner of that league, so all I had to do is say, okay, well, this game was over even before the Monday night, or even kicked off, so I don't really think it has essentially no bearing. I suppose in theory, in some like alternate reality, I suppose Stephon Diggs could have caught the ball like five times and fumbled the ball all five times and had like negative 100 yards. I suppose
that's definitely something that an alternate happen. Reality.
yeah. That's like that somewhere down the multiverse. That's like way, way, way down there. That's not like the one that's just adjacent to our own. Right. So that was Vic as a champion. That was a pretty easy decision to make, but I'm sure there were other leagues in which the decision was not nearly as easy. The current op of the fantasy show, his name is Austin Mackey, and Austin, I saw Austin, I think in studio, I guess it was on Thursday or Friday, Austin. It was at some point after the Monday nighter, and we were chatting about how our fantasy season had gone, and we were chatting about the DeMar Hamlin thing as well. And then I'm like, so how did your season go, Austin? And he busts out his phone and he shows me, and he's like, I won two titles, baby. So congratulations to Austin, who continues in the proud tradition of fantasy show ops. Josh Santos also having won a fantasy championship as well. So congratulations, Austin. Welcome to the winner's circle.
I didn't know it was such proud lineage, though, either. So that's awesome to hear. Yeah, I couldn't have done it without you guys in three leagues, won two of them. I would say with you guys and Brandon Ayuk. Ayuk was a huge help in week 17 there. But yeah, two championships, first year on the board. So I'm going to join more leagues next year. I'm expecting a similar return, guys. So high expectations.
So you're expecting a 2 of 3 fantasy championships.
66% of the leagues I'm in, I'm going to win from here on out.
All right. I like it.
I think I need to be a board op next year on the show, because I didn't win anything.
Oh, Matt, I'll train you, buddy. I'll train you.
Yeah. I can't do it. I'm too stupid to do it. So, and it's funny, too, because when we do this show, I give advice, and then I sometimes don't even take my own advice. Because I'm like, oh, I'll just get really cute with this decision. And then it never works out. So I think next year, I think I'm going to take my own advice that I give on the show.
It's probably for the best.
I tell people to listen to the show, and then I go out and start Rashad White over DeAndre Swift, which I should never do. I should never do. Because, you guys know me. I love DeAndre Swift. And that move in itself probably cost me a chance at a championship. What an idiot. But I digress.
How did your season end, Matt? I didn't ask you. What happened? Like, what happened in the various? Okay, so not positively. I assume
the Patriots scoring a billion points against the Cardinals kicked me out of our work league because I ended up losing that matchup, even though I thought it was firmly in hand, being up 14 points going into the Monday nighter. And then I made the bad QB decision to start Tyler Huntley, which cost me in another league. My two dynasty leagues, I decided, and one's a new one. I'm like, I'm not good enough to make the playoffs. This is what happens when you rely a lot on guys that get hurt a lot, like J.K. Dobbins and DeAndre Swift. And then you rely, like we're going to talk about our picks that we made, our top 12s. And I had a fair bit of Diontae Johnson this year. That did not work out a lot, very well for me. I had a good chunk of Jerry Jeudy this year. Did not work out well. So, I mean, it wasn't a good year, but I feel like on this show, and I don't mean to pat both of ourselves on the back, but I feel advice was savvy. Our advice was savvy. I think we helped a lot of people. Like, text us 590-590 and tell us if we helped you win a fantasy championship, because we need to show this information to our bosses so they bring us back next year.
It's true. Yeah, I do think also As far as the fantasy show plans go, I don't think anything's been set in stone, but I do believe we are here through to the end of the Super Bowl, which is like February 12th or February 13th or something like that. And then after that, we are on a bit of a hiatus until, I guess, the summer of 2023, at which point we'll come back with the rankings and maybe do a mock draft and get set for that. I'm always a big fan. I don't know about you, Matt, but I've said this to you before. I'm not a huge college football guy. And I say this knowing that the national championship game is tomorrow night. But having said that, like, even though I don't watch a lot of college football on a like on a week to week basis during the actual season, I am a big fan of watching the national championship game just to get a sense of some of the guys who are, you know, making names for themselves. That's why I like to watch. I watched last year and you watch Jameson Williams, for example, despite the injury and so on and so forth. But I do like watching because of the NFL draft. The NFL draft in April, I think it's the end of April, is one of my favorite events on the entire calendar because, like, the draft heads and, like, the gurus and the mock draft, there's, like, a million of them. It's honestly, I think it is so much fun. So that maybe that's something we can cover in some way, shape, or form in the fantasy show. Maybe it's a podcast episode. Remember, we're back for that 1 week. I don't know, whatever it is. But that's something I do like enjoy talking about in terms of dynasty leagues because I'm going to be launching a dynasty league with you and a couple of our pals and so on this season. And, you know, it's a kind of always a mixed bag as to when, you know, what platform you should use. And you and I discuss sleeper, when you should start a new dynasty league. Should it be before the NFL draft and have the rookie draft be its own thing? Like, I just, it's crazy to think that the season basically ended. I'm already thinking about 5 million different things for next year.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I'm already thinking about next year because I had nothing this year. So I'm already saying, you know what? Next year's my year. It's definitely my year. And of course I'm going to add another dynasty league to my plate because I don't have enough. You and I have talked about this. I've talked about it on the show. I do not get paid by Sleeper for this endorsement.
I'm not so sure.
But Sleeper to me is it because it's also free. And I know, like, I've used CBS in the past, and I do like CBS's platform, but there's a cost that is associated with that. We've just used CBS in one of our leagues for a while, so we just kind of stuck with it. But Sleeper to me offers the best platform. It's the best one for making it, just customizing it to what you like. And my favorite thing about it, because CBS does allow you to have multiple matchups and you can set your schedule. Sleeper does not have multiple matchups against opponents, but what they do have is a second matchup against the league median score, which I think is important because how many times have you had the second highest scoring week and played against the highest scoring team? It just eliminates a lot of the luck factor. And I think what it gives us is a real evaluation of which teams are the best and which teams are not every single week. So I think that to me is why it's good. Like, there's some other things about it that you're kind of like, there's, you know, the sometimes the notifications aren't great, but whatever. I think the Sleeper is the best for that. And you can just, I feel like Sleeper to me, they're great when you message them on Twitter. They're always willing to give you an answer. They're always very helpful. And they also are always taking people's questions and their suggestions and trying to make the app better. So I think that Sleeper's been really, really good for fantasy football, and I hope that it continues.
I've never used any of the traditional platforms for a dynasty league like ESPN or Yahoo, and I think each has its flaws and each has some great strengths, but the one I've always used is My Fantasy League. That's the one I've used for a couple of like keeper leagues, dynasty leagues. I'm in a couple in a couple of IDP leagues, and those are pretty good for IDP as well. So I don't think they have all of the offensive line players. I think most of them are on there. Like, I've been in some pretty like serious like 32 team leagues where like you run every aspect and you're drafting like punters and like, you know, all sorts of kinds of different parts of fantasy, which obviously are like a little less standard, but My Fantasy League is a good one as well. But I think for our league, I think we might give it a shot on that.
And
Sleeper.
Slow drafts. This is I always tell people this, especially because when you're doing dynasty drafts, you're talking, you know, 24 to 28, sometimes 30 roster spots. the best way to do it, in my opinion, we've always done slow drafts where everybody has an 8-hour clock because people work, and then you don't have to dedicate a full day to drafting, because that's essentially what it comes down to. When you're, you know, if you're drafting 300 players, I mean, that is a grind. And it gives you also, especially for Dynasty, gives you opportunities to trade picks, right? And I think that, to me, has been I've done that in every Dynasty league that I've been in. The 8-hour clock has worked out well. It does become a grind near the end, but it just offers people, it's like, we don't have to set aside a day because, you know, people have things to do. I mean, fantasy football is life, yes, but like real life gets in the way sometimes of fantasy football. And I know my wife's not listening, so we're good. But I found that the longer clock has made a big difference as well. Like I know I'm giving a lot of opinions on what our league should look like now, Sho. And it's not my decision, and it's going to be evidently it's going to be yours. But I think when we look at, you know, especially the evolution of fantasy football, before it was just like, hey, pick your team for this year. Then it was, oh, there's keeper leagues. Oh, now it's dynasty leagues. Like, I always wonder what the next thing is. Like, best ball is in there too. Like, have you heard of these multiverse leagues?
Multiverse leagues?
Yeah. So basically somebody told me about this a couple of years ago, or maybe it was a little bit longer, where you actually have, like, let's say it was NFL and Major League Baseball. You have like two dynasty teams that you can basically trade like NFL players to your, you can trade an NFL player for an MLB player, basically.
Okay.
So it's a different type of league. I don't know if I could ever do that, because I mean, my head would explode. But these are like, this is the evolution of what I've seen multiverse leagues, where I think there's three leagues, and I would assume that the other one is well, I mean, it's either the NBA or the NHL, but I think in this one specifically, it was NFL, MLB, and the NHL, which is really cool.
That is kind of cool. Maybe that's something we can try next season. I don't know how you would do that necessarily, but that'd be something. Like, it seems kind of like a fun thing. Maybe that's something where you could do like fantasy football kind of meshed with, in some way, shape, or form, basketball and hockey, since they all, like, roughly speaking, started within a couple of weeks of one another. Whereas, like, I think it would be more difficult to start the fantasy football season and do that for, like, Major League Baseball, considering what the baseball regular season, like, in the Major League Baseball regular season ends like at the end of September or thereabouts, right? Or so I think first week of October. So yeah, I think that's probably not so doable, but hockey, basketball, football, that'd be kind of cool. Anyways, let's take a quick break, Matt. When we come back, I want to get to our fantasy MVPs, the fantasy busts, and in the next hour, we'll take a look back at the top 12s. I have the top 12 list written down. I tried to exclude last night's results. So, like, anything that happened for, like, Patrick Mahomes, for example, anything that happened for, like, the Chiefs, Raiders, Titans, Jags, I didn't include, roughly speaking, in the rankings overall. So just at the end of week 17 is where things fall. Obviously, no Bills, no Bengals game in a meaningful way statistically, obviously affects this list to a certain degree, but it's still something we can talk about. So we'll talk about our top 12s. At the next hour, hey, if you have any text line questions, if you are participating in a week 18 final, I don't love it, but hey, we will do our best to help you out. So if there are any text line questions, you can always reach us, of course, on the People's Text Line at 590-590. But fantasy MVPs and busts up next on The Fantasy Show, Show and Matt, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. To the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you. It is week 18 in the NFL, the end of the regular season in the NFL. Of course, fantasy-wise, the fantasy championships are largely over. But still, if you do have some week 18 fantasy football questions, you can please text us at 590-590 on the People's Text Line. We'll take a look in about half an hour, see if there are any text line questions. But regardless, before the games kick off largely a little later on this afternoon, I'll check back in to see if there are any lingering questions. But Matt, as we've discussed, today will largely be kind of a look back on the 2022 fantasy football season. We'll do some of our top 12 evaluations in the next hour. But right now, I wanted to get to fantasy MVPs, fantasy busts, biggest risers, biggest fallers. I admit when you listed biggest risers, you texted me. You were like, hey, let's do this, 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 and this. And I said, okay, that sounds great. Biggest risers, biggest fallers. What were your criteria for biggest risers, biggest fall? Is it like Travis Kelce, for example, is a guy who I think was drafted at the turn, right? Probably at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, probably where he should be drafted next year, maybe depending on what your league settings are, but he's going to be 34. Having said that, his last couple weeks of the fantasy season, the playoffs, were not great. So would he be a faller? Like, I'm curious what your criteria were for risers and fallers.
So he would be a faller for me, but I mean, I don't think he's going to fall that much. Like, I'm talking guys that maybe not fall off a cliff, but we're talking two or three round drops.
Oh, I see. Okay. ADP okay. Here. I got you.
So for example, do we want to start with those or you want to go with the MVP first?
Yeah, let's do the risers fallers. Let's do that.
Okay. So I actually ended up with three risers and two fallers because, you know, I've got so much time on my hands. So as it pertains to biggest fallers, I think the first one is pretty obvious, but yesterday's news of Sean McVay potentially not being back with the LA Rams to me signals big changes in LA, meaning if he's saying he's not coming back, I wonder what conversations he's had with Aaron Donald. I wonder what conversations he's had with Matthew Stafford. And if Matthew Stafford is gone and Sean McVay is gone, Cooper Kupp takes a serious dip. Could be a guy that could be a trade candidate. He's coming off of injury, but we're talking about a player that was drafted as the wide receiver one or wide receiver two. In some cases, Cooper Kupp was drafted with the first overall pick.
It's true.
And there's just so many question marks surrounding the Rams. He's coming off the injury, like I mentioned. And a lot of what makes him great for fantasy is just the sheer volume, like double-digit targets, double-digit catches. And it's not taking away from Cooper Kupp's ability, but if Baker Mayfield is throwing him the ball, are we really all that enamored with Cooper Kupp? Probably not. If he gets traded, is he going to get the same ridiculous volume that he got with the Rams? Is he going to be schemed the same way? Probably not. So I think he goes from wide receiver one or wide receiver two to like a third or fourth round pick if everything goes the way I think it will. And that's a significant drop off. I believe Cooper Kupp is also, he's around 30 years old. So it's like there's a lot of things that go against him. And we've seen the numbers about players that once they enter that age 30 year, and he will be 30 by the time the next season starts, that there is a significant drop off after 30. We know that it's well documented, but for him not having the same quarterback, not having the same scheme, I think that there's a big drop off coming for Cooper Kupp.
I like that one actually, because I mean, I don't like it because I like drafting Cooper Kupp because he's been so incredibly reliable, but yeah, that's a tough one because you're right. And to be clear, if Sean McVay doesn't return to the Los Angeles Rams, it won't be because he's being fired. It's because he's likely taking a year or two off. He might just retire and be done with it. There were some notifications, I think, that maybe Sean Payton might be on his way to Denver and that the Saints want like a first-round pick and more for any of the Sean Payton conversations if they go anywhere further than just conversations. So I got to imagine, like, let's say Sean McVay did something similar. He took a year off and decided to come back, and then maybe he does coach the Rams or coach someone else. That's just like, either way, that's not a situation I think I'd want to really be a part of because I, for example, thought maybe I was talking myself into, I don't know if biggest riser necessarily would be a place I'd put this guy, but Cam Akers, based on the way the season ended and, you know, based on how the season started injury wise and then falling out of favor, it looks like he might never play another down for the Rams, and Kyron Williams is the guy now and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden Cam Akers is getting like three touchdowns in a crucial game. And then he's being given every carry in the fantasy championship and so on. So I kind of thought Cam Akers would have been in a risers conversation. And I agree with you that Kupp, if McVay is there, is a part of the fallers conversation. But the truth is, honestly, man, if McVay is not there next year, I'm not sure there are a lot of Los Angeles Rams I would confidently draft in the first, I don't even know, like 8 to 10 rounds?
Probably not. I mean, it all depends on who the quarterback is, but the quarterback might very well be Baker Mayfield, because it's not as if the Rams have an incredible amount of draft capital that they can use. Like, I mean, I think they still have their second round pick, but they trade those away like it's candy. What I think ends up happening is they just end up starting to deal players and start to recoup those picks, get younger, and then kind of see where they go. On the McVay conversation, show I 100% believe that he's going to TV. Why wouldn't you? You get this money. There's no pressure on you to perform in terms of coaching and whatever, and the workload is a lot less. Like, look at what Tony Romo's done. Like, Sean McVay could be in that type of conversation.
That's true, yeah.
Because he's a brilliant mind. And he's already been offered a deal. I think it was Amazon that had offered him, like, $10 million to do, I think, the Thursday night package a year. That's pretty good money last time I checked. And he's got a contract. And I just think he's going to end up going to TV. It's not like he's old. I think he's just a bit older than I am. And you are, which makes me feel really bad because I'm here and Sean McVay's winning Super Bowls and whatnot. But is there a chance that he sits out a year and then comes back? Absolutely there is. Maybe he gets tired of doing the TV thing if that's what he chooses. So, but yes, I agree. I would not be touching any LA Rams, maybe even the whole draft show. Like, unless there's insane value, I just would not see a reason to be drafting any Rams, because in reality, if all those guys are gone, they're probably one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Matt Gay. Where do you draft Matt Gay? I don't know.
Oh, man, he's going to kick a billion field goals next year. Yeah. So he might be in the conversation. But that's a last-round pick.
I don't even know. Do you do that? Like, do you draft guys with your very last – like, you draft your defense and kicker. Like, in a 16-round draft, are you drafting defense in round 15, kicker in round 16?
Likely, yeah, because there's just no reason to like, and kickers, I mean, just find the offense that you think is going to stall in the red zone all the time. Like, who would have thought that it was going to be Denver this year? I mean, Brandon McManus is a good kicker, but who would have thought Denver was going to be the answer to that question?
You know, it's funny, like, what I like to do sometimes, just because I know my league mates in some of these leagues go after, they like to take the defenses, like, relatively speaking, early. Like the best defense from the year prior and Justin Tucker always are the first things off the board in defense and kicker categories. So what I generally like to do is, just to screw with some of my league mates, I'll go and take the defense around before, just because, like, just for fun. These are guys I've known, like, for like the last like 15 years, essentially, right? So just to prevent them from getting them, I'll draft them. And then my last pick, you know what's funny? My last pick of the regular season this year was Isaiah Pacheco. And it wasn't someone who I thought would still be on my team come like the end of the fantasy actual season, like playoffs included, but he was, which is kind of funny. I'm surprised I actually had the wherewithal to hold on to him, because I like churn the bottom of the roster like butter. Like, I'm the guy who's making like a roster drop and pick up like every single day in some of these leagues. So I'm surprised Pacheco made it. But no, on the Rams side of things, I 100% agree with you. I think that right now, at least, maybe things change, but right now, at least, it certainly feels as though there are not a lot of guys who are on that list. Who else is on your, let's say, we just did a biggest faller. Who else is on your biggest fallers list?
Oh, that for me is Deebo Samuel. And he was going around wide receiver 6 at the draft the last year. And the injuries, the usage, and the acquisition of Christian McCaffrey, plus the reemergence of our board up Austin Mackey's guy, Brandon Ayuk, like, he falls into the 20s for wide receivers for me next year. Because a lot of what Deebo Samuel did last season that made him even more fantasy relevant was they used him as a running back. And he didn't want to be paid like that. He wanted to be paid as a wide receiver. And he did get paid. But between the injuries and then bringing in Christian McCaffrey, which took away some of those opportunities, especially in the red zone, Deebo Samuel needs to be a wide receiver again. And I'm not saying that he can't do that, but I think that this season will leave a lot of people with a sour taste in their mouth with him, because the production just was not there. He wasn't healthy. And when he was on the field, Brandon Ayuk really took over that wide receiver one job in San Francisco. Then we get to the question of what the heck are they going to do at quarterback next year? We're pretty sure that it's Trey Lance that's going to get the starting job, but he's coming off of a significant injury. I'm guessing he's ready by the time the season starts. But what does Trey Lance look like at the beginning of next season? Because it wasn't great this year. This will be year three for him in the league, and he's barely played. I just don't see a situation where we're going to be relying heavily on Deebo Samuel, especially because part of what made him so great for fantasy purposes was that gadget type role where we would get, you know, four or five carries that he could turn into 30 yards and a touchdown. And I just don't see that happening with Christian McCaffrey there, because I think they're going to use, you know, traditional running backs with Kyle Shanahan. And let's not forget that if Trey Lance is any good, he's going to be using his legs too. So it's going to take away opportunities even in the passing game for a guy like Deebo Samuel. So there's no way he's going in the top 10 wide receivers. And I don't even think he goes in like the top 18. I think he's around 20 next year, maybe even later.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring up the 49ers, because I think they're so much fun to watch. And by the way, I think the 49ers defense are going to be a pretty relatively highly drafted in that league I mentioned to you a little earlier on. But I when you look at all the skilled position players that exist on the fantasy side of things for the 49ers, you look at Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel. I have my doubts that Trey Lance can support all of them to the degree that they are used to being supported at, right? Like, we're getting to the top 12 stuff in the next hour, but just as a sneak peek, let's see. Brandon Ayuk in half PPR finished as wide receiver 14. It was a pretty close contest, but still wide receiver 14. Running backs-wise, Christian McCaffrey, no shock, he finished as running back 2 overall, just behind Austin Eckler. And tight ends, George Kittle finished as the 4th overall tight end in between Mark Andrews and, shockingly, Taysom Hill, which I'm sure we'll have something to say about when we get there. But my point is that can Trey Lance, or even let's just say for the sake of discussion that he's not ready and for whatever reason, injury related, they decide to move on from him for whatever reason. There could be a million reasons why Trey Lance does not start week one of the 2023 NFL season. Let's just say he doesn't. And it is Brock Purdy again. Can the 49ers QB, whoever it is, support all of those guys to an RB2, TE4, and a top 20 finish, top 15 finish for both Ayuk and Deebo Samuel? I don't know, man. I have my doubts. Like, I honestly do think that Christian McCaffrey is probably the safest bet to maintain as much of that value as humanly possible, but I almost feel like every single San Francisco 49er, maybe outside of George Kittle, is probably in for a bit of a tumble. Not a huge one, but a bit of a tumble next year in terms of stats.
The only reason why I would say that one of the wide receivers gets theirs is that in Kyle Shanahan's offense, they do a lot. There's a lot of movement pre-snap. Their MO in a lot of cases is yards after catch. And that's where they've really thrived. That's where a guy like Deebo Samuel has really thrived. But for me, it's just the emergence of Ayuk just knocks Deebo Samuel down. But I agree with you. If Trey Lance comes out of the gate, you know, completing 55% of his passes, there's going to be a significant drop off here, because I'm on board with you. Like, I think McCaffrey's the first player taken off the board next year, even ahead of Austin Eckler, because we saw what McCaffrey did once he got to San Francisco, and it's the perfect shiny toy for Kyle Shanahan. I just think that McCaffrey he's going to get his. Yes, absolutely, the most repeatable. I think that George Kittle still gets his as well. The question becomes the wide receivers, because George Kittle, they use him everywhere. Like, I know he's on the field all the time because he blocks so well. But George Kittle is just an athletic freak, and they take advantage of that. Not so sure about the wide receivers. Like, it's amazing that we're talking about having more confidence in Brock Purdy, who is the last pick in the NFL draft, to Trey Lance, who was the 3rd overall pick. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, eh?
This is what football does to the show. It makes us crazy.
I do sometimes wonder what Kyle Shanahan, and they had the chance, but what a Kyle Shanahan 49ers offense would look like led by Justin Fields. Like, what would Justin Fields look like in, like, if you just took Justin Fields and you put him in place of Brock Purdy right now, what would that offense look like? Probably pretty good, honestly. Like, but having said that, like, I do wonder what mobile quarterbacks, guys who move the ball with their feet first as opposed to their arms, it does make you kind of wonder how much Ayuk and Samuel and even to a lesser degree some of the running backs take a hit from that. I guess if they're an up-tempo offense, and I think the 49ers are that, you would feel good about it, especially if you're being paired with a pretty good defense as well. But it's just, I think there is some uncertainty baked into the top fantasy options for the 49ers going into next season. But yeah, I mean, if I have the number one overall pick, I probably am taking Christian McCaffrey, maybe just slightly ahead of Austin Eckler. But I mean, if I quote unquote end up with Austin Eckler, I'm not going to complain too much. Did you have another follower, or did you want to get to some of the fantasy risers before we move on to the MVPs and busts?
I've got some fantasy risers next.
Let's do it.
So, all right. So my biggest risers, let's start with running back. And this one is pretty, I mean, maybe it's not so obvious, but I think it's pretty obvious. And Ramondre Stevenson is the guy. He finished RB10. He really didn't have the starting role until about week three. And he showed to us that, you know, in camp, there was a lot of talk, Ramondre Stevenson going to be the pass catching back to Damian Harris. And we're like, yeah, okay, Ramondre Stevenson's going to be the pass catching back. Sure he is. And then he ended up being that. But the difference was he also ended up being the guy who was getting the early down work. It felt like Ramondre Stevenson was literally on the field for every offensive play, especially when Damian Harris was out. Damian Harris is a free agent. And I know generally speaking, we don't love to overvalue Patriots backs because there's usually two or three of them. And you're like, oh, good luck picking one this week. But I think in this case, we figured out that Ramondre Stevenson is that guy. Like, he is the guy that can pass block. He's a great pure runner. He's also really good catching passes out of the backfield. And if Mac Jones is the quarterback again next season, which, I mean, all signs point to he will be, that's check down city. And I do wonder what they do with the offensive play callers. Like, I don't think Matt Patricia's calling plays next year. I don't think that Joe Judge is calling plays next year. I really don't believe that's going to be the case. But having said all that, Ramondre Stevenson was one of those, you know, for the zero RB truthers that were out there, he was one of the guys that people had circled on their draft list because of the fact that the Patriots just ran the ball a lot. And Damian Harris is good, yes, but all the talk about Ramondre Stevenson that he could end up being the guy ended up being correct. So I think what we've learned about the Patriots, especially with the offensive play calling, is they did evolve eventually. And they realized that Ramondre Stevenson is that guy. The fact that Damian Harris is a free agent, I do not believe that he's going to be back in New England next year. And I think that bodes really well for Ramondre Stevenson.
I do agree with you, by the way. 10th overall finish in half PPR leagues, I think, is especially after considering where he was drafted. I know he was tabbed as a potential breakout candidate, but that he actually followed up on that for much of the season, I think, is very impressive. But I do hope people were able to weather the last couple of weeks, right? Because in against Cincinnati, a 2.3-point finish, and against Miami, a 6.1-point finish. And that game against Cincy was pretty brutal, right? I mean, they fell behind. They had to throw the ball a lot more. It ended up working out for them. And then, of course, the costly fumble to essentially lose the game for the Patriots at the very end of that one. So I am hoping people survived in the end. But then again, like, it goes back to the conversation we had before about, like, how a lot of what happens, a lot of what goes on in the fantasy playoffs does, unfortunately, both, I guess, fortunately for some, unfortunately for others, comes down to luck. So, hey, if you manage to get to the playoffs on the backs of Ramondre Stevenson, maybe you don't mind too much. But, I mean, ultimately speaking, yeah, 2 points and 6 points in weeks 60 and 17 probably don't help a lot of people. But I agree with you. If let's say it's Bill O'Brien calling plays for the Patriots next year, and certainly looks like, if not, I don't know if that's going to be the case, like a stone-cold lock, but it's definitely possible that Bill O'Brien is the play caller for the Patriots next year. I think I would feel okay about drafting not only Stevenson, maybe a teensy bit higher, maybe Jacoby Myers, depends on if he comes back or not. He's a free agent, but if these are the guys who are the skill position players amongst others for the Patriots, if Mac Jones is the one throwing the ball with them, if some continuity is there on offense, I think you can feel okay about those guys. Do you have one more follow, or we have a couple minutes left here before we take a break. Do you want to get to our fantasy MVPs?
Okay, so I can do two quick. Biggest riser, James Cook. He took some time, but he looks like the more dynamic back in the building.
You love James Cook.
I do.
No one loves James Cook more than Matt Marchese.
You know what I love? I love Georgia running backs. There's just something about them. They always seem to produce. He catches passes. He has the highest yards per carry in the NFL. And Devin Singletary is a free agent. I would not be shocked to see James Cook with third round draft capital.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's high.
He's that dog. Right. Okay. And then my other one, you're going to love this. Evan Engram, if he stays in Jacksonville, he's going to be a top five drafted tight end. It's just the effect that Doug Peterson has on tight ends. If he goes elsewhere, he probably still gets drafted as a top eight tight end, but I don't know if the production is going to be the same. This has been the perfect marriage between Evan Engram and Doug Peterson, because Doug Peterson has that effect on tight ends and the way he uses them in his offense. It's been great. It's been a great marriage. So I'm hoping, because I would love to keep throwing Evan Ingram's name out there just to piss you off next season, that he stays in Jacksonville.
even without what happened last night, it wasn't like a super banner night for him in the second game, I guess, of week 18, pardon me. But even if you take out Engram's finish from last night, which I think was like around 7 or 8 points, he still finishes as a top six tight end, because he finished just behind Taysom Hill for number six, just by a hair too. I think like Taysom Hill and Engram were separated by like 5 points or less than 5 points in the end, right? So ultimately speaking, Evan Engram, by any way you slice it, had a fantastic season. Won't be on my fantasy team next year, I'll tell you that much, Marchese. Fantasy MVPs and fantasy busts. You know what? Let's save the MVP for the end of the segment. But my fantasy busts are, I mean, the busts are pretty easy, I feel like, to identify, relatively speaking, because everyone knows who the highest ranked players were. I try and avoid guys who were busts because of injury. Because injuries are a crapshoot to me. Like sometimes you can predict them, or sometimes you can say, okay, this guy has a higher chance of being injured or having an injury happen to him because of past injuries. And I know we all said that about Christian McCaffrey until it just wasn't, essentially, right? And now here we are. Christian McCaffrey is number one overall draft pick again. So that for that reason, I try to avoid injury. But boy, it's hard for me to ignore Jonathan Taylor as a bust, because he was, for a lot of people, the number one overall draft pick. Really, like every Colts player, I feel like if I could just tab the entire Colts offense as a bust, I would. But it starts and ends, I think, with Jonathan Taylor, because he was the number one overall draft pick for most people. Kyle Pitts, honorable mention as well, because, boy, you and I were both pretty high on Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, The Jonathan Taylor thing is, he wasn't even really producing when he was healthy. And that's in large part to how poor the quarterback play was this year. Like Matt Ryan, we thought was going to be so much better for the Colts. He was horrible. He wasn't any better than Carson Wentz. He was actually worse, which is shocking for me to say. And the Kyle Pitts thing, I blame Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith was a disaster for Kyle Pitts. I don't know and Marcus Mariota wasn't very good for him either. Like that just wasn't a pretty situation. I had two as well. Russell Wilson, he had a top running back in Javonte Williams. Yes, he got hurt. Two really good wide receivers in Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, and he was horrible. And he was one of those quarterbacks that we thought that we could take in the later rounds that would end up being like a top 10 guy.
Yeah.
Guys like Derek Carr, also horrible. Oof. Matthew Stafford, hurt. Kirk Cousins, actually good. And they could really solidify the position without breaking the bank on your draft capital. And that didn't happen. And you know my Bills fandom show. My other fantasy flop was Gabe Davis. He had 80 yards in a TD in week one, and then it was basically a disaster. He finished as wide receiver 28, so not horrible, but we were expecting like top 15, top 18 numbers from him. He's still young. He's not a player that I'm certainly trading away for nothing in dynasty leagues, but that was certainly not what we expected. He had some boom weeks. Like, he reminded me of an early career Mike Williams. The game that he had like 160 yards and two touchdowns, thanks in large part to like a 98-yard touchdown pass from Josh Allen. And that was against the Steelers. But like other than that, it wasn't a good year for Gabe Davis. And I do wonder if the Bills look at bringing in another wide receiver, maybe in the draft this upcoming year for Josh Allen.
I wonder, honestly, I could see that. I could definitely see that. Maybe help take some of that pressure off of Stephon Diggs and maybe make that offense a little more, maybe a little more four-dimensional, perhaps. I do think you're right. Fantasy MVPs, let's get to those really quickly before we take a quick break here. I was tempted to go with the Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce stack for my fantasy MVP. But you know what? Based on the way the season ended for, well, not counting yesterday's game because that was a Week 18 game, but based on the way the season ended for Travis Kelce specifically, Patrick Mahomes was still pretty good. But for Kelce, I'm going to avoid that. You know what? I'm going to give my fantasy MVP to someone I honestly never thought I'd talk about again in the world of fantasy football, Geno Smith. Geno Smith is my fantasy MVP. That guy, you probably, like I did, picked up Geno Smith for nothing. Like, you got him off of waivers. So if you're keeping Geno Smith next year for essentially nothing, hey, kudos to you, because he was absolutely phenomenal. He propelled me in a couple of my two QB leagues right to the playoffs. I think he only had a handful of down weeks. Even when you thought he was down and out, he still pulled it out late in a lot of situations. Yeah, it kind of tapered off at the end of the season once Kenneth Walker was injured in the running game. Took a bit of a hit, so they kind of can key in on him a little more. Tyler Lockett missed some time at the end of the year as well. But you know what? By and large, Geno Smith was one of the most reliable QBs in the entire NFL all season long, to the tune of a QB6 finish, which is absolutely phenomenal. So I'm giving the MVP to Geno.
Yeah, I went with a quarterback as well, and that was Jalen Hurts. And you and I talked about it. We weren't sure about Jalen Hurts coming into this year. We knew the rushing floor was going to be there, but it was going to be the arm that was going to be the question. And it does show us what the addition of an alpha wide receiver does to a quarterback, because bringing in A.J. Brown was clearly the perfect recipe for success.
Yeah.
A.J. Brown was great. Devontae Smith turned into the player that we thought he was going to be when he won the Heisman Trophy 2 years ago. And we knew about the rushing floor. The arm has just been such a good asset. That offensive line is so good in Philadelphia. And Jalen Hurts was drafted outside the top five. Like, it was usually Allen, Mahomes, Herbert, Burrow, Jackson.
Yeah.
You could maybe throw some other guys in that conversation as well. But you could safely say that in a lot of cases, Jalen Hurts was drafted as QB6 to QB8. And he in turn turned up with a top three fantasy finish. And that was largely in part because he missed two games, because he probably would have been, you know, QB1 if that were the case. So Jalen Hurts for me was the MVP, just because, and I know for the playoffs he wasn't available for you, but he got you to that point, and he made a lot of other roster decisions a lot easier because you knew what Jalen Hurts' floor was.
Oh yeah, look, he finished as QB3, like you said, and if he plays, he finished, I think, about 20 to 25 points behind Patrick Mahomes for the QB1 spot. And had he played two games the way he had been playing, there's no doubt in my mind that he would have topped 400 points and would have been the QB1 on the season. But hey, I mean, that's part of fantasy football. It's an injury thing. I almost feel like I do think also in real life, Patrick Mahomes has all but guaranteed, especially after last night, he has all but guaranteed himself the MVP. But boy, I mean, there were some people who were like, oh, the Eagles are so well built, anyone could go in there and win. Well, Gardner Minshew, despite his best efforts, did not win a single game starting games for the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think that does speak to not only how good Jalen Hurts is, but just how good his fit is in the system they essentially constructed for him with Nick Sirianni down in Philadelphia. But I agree with you. Yeah, Jalen Hurts definitely well-deserving of your fantasy MVP. Mine goes to Geno Smith. Let's take a very quick break, Matt. We'll actually continue the QB conversation next. We'll take a look back at our top 12 predictions from August and take a look at as well at the rest of the top 12. I was going to say in half PPR leagues, but for QBs doesn't really matter. But we'll get to the rest of the top 12 position players on the next hour of the Fantasy Show. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Sho Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Matt Marchese alongside you for the next hour until 10 p.m. Eastern. It is week 18 across the NFL as the National Football League gets set for the playoffs. Wildcard weekend, super wildcard weekend, I guess. I'm not sure if they changed the name, but anyways, the playoffs start next week. and on the road to the Super Bowl in Arizona this weekend. Again, if you have any questions, this weekend you can text us at 590-590 on the People's Text Line. I don't actually see any here because I guess everyone is hibernating now that the fantasy season is over. But again, you can reach us anytime at 590-590. Matt, as I said, we're kind of discussing taking a look back on our predictions for top 12 rankings in half PPR leagues, although that matters less for QBs, but still half PPR league predictions from, I believe we got this out either at the end of August or like right at the beginning of September. But it's always pretty interesting, always kind of fun to take a look back at who the consensus rankings were. Guys, maybe you were going to take a little bit of a leap on, guys you were higher on, guys you were lower on, based on how the lists actually shook out. So why don't we start with quarterbacks? As we kind of ended the previous segment talking about quarterbacks, you gave your fantasy MVP to Jalen Hurts. I gave mine to Geno Smith. Unsurprisingly, both of those guys are in the top 12. I don't think it's a shocker to say that neither of us had Geno Smith in the top 12. I don't think because
fair to say.
Yeah, I don't think a single person on planet Earth, even Seahawks, the most ardent Seahawks fans, thought Geno Smith would be a top 12 fantasy QB, but he was, and he was very good this year. But let's go down the list. I'm going to give you the top 12 as it was in our league, and then we can go through your rankings and my rankings. So this is a top 12 at the end of week 17, because like I said, week 18 usually, like for the most part, doesn't count for fantasy purposes. So number one, Patrick Mahomes, unsurprisingly, 398.94 fantasy points. Josh Allen, 386.76 fantasy points. Jalen Hurts, 374.58. Joe Burrow in fourth, 351.10. Justin Fields with a top five fantasy finish, which is pretty impressive considering that the first half of the season essentially was not so great for old Fields there. He had 306.98 fantasy points. Geno Smith, just a smidge under 300. He had 299.26 fantasy points. Daniel Jones at the seventh spot, 294 on the nose. Kirk Cousins, 292.58 at the 8 overall quarterback. Trevor Lawrence sneaking in there as the 9th overall quarterback, 283.26. I did, for Mahomes and Lawrence, by the way, I did subtract their like week 18 outputs because I think Yahoo did count some of those things, but this is not including last night's performances. So Trevor Lawrence, number 9. Jared Goff, number 10, 281.36. Tom Brady, which honestly I was kind of surprised by considering that Brady has had just a not great season overall, but I mean, statistically, I guess he did make it up. He didn't turn the ball over a lot, like by the end of the season when it was all said and done, but 273.3 points in the 11th spot finish for Brady. And then in the 12th spot, Justin Herbert, 271.44. Actually, after Herbert, the distance between Herbert and the 13th quarterback, who is actually Lamar Jackson, and he missed a lot of time this year with injury, is about 30 points. Look, Lamar Jackson had 243 points. So a sizable difference between the 12 and 13 spot, which means that the top 12 QBs for the 2022 season, Matt, were like pretty solidly in there.
Yeah. And I look back on like the Lamar Jackson thing. Lamar Jackson, the first 3 weeks was untouchable.
Oh my God.
I was like, He's going to be the highest scoring player in fantasy. And I felt good about having him at number two. That didn't turn out very well. So I finished with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the top 12 I had right in terms of just being in the top 12. I didn't have anybody at the correct rank. Actually, I had Josh Allen. No, I had nobody in the correct ranking. Jalen Hurts was close, but that was pretty much it.
I had 6 of the 12 in there, and funnily enough, I had Brady at 11, so yay for me, Brady. Brady had the number 11 spot. Your rankings were as follows. You had Josh Allen. We actually both had Josh Allen as number one QB.
And he would have probably finished as number one had he played that last game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But again, it's fine. It's fine.
He was behind Mahomes in the end by, let's see, about 12 points. They're about 12 in the change points thereabouts. So, yeah, I have a hard time believing that Josh Allen wouldn't have accumulated 12 points, essentially, against the Cincinnati Bengals. So you and I actually both had Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes as 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I had Kyler Murray at 5. You had Jalen Hurts at 5. I had Russell Wilson. You had Joe Burrow at 6. Let's see, 7. I had Jalen Hurts at 7. You had Rodgers at 7. I had Derek Carr at 8. Woo, that was a swing and a miss. You had Brady at 8. I had Burrow at 9. You had Stafford at 9. Dak Prescott for 10 for me. And you had Derek Carr at 10. I had Brady at 11, like I mentioned. You had Russell Wilson at 11. And then I had Rodgers at 12, and you had Justin Fields at 12. Both of our sleepers, by the way, did not do much. I had Matt Ryan as my sleeper. That was I can't tell what's worse, Derek Carr at 8 or Matt Ryan as my sleeper. You had Jameis Winston as your sleeper.
It didn't look
terrible to start the season, and then, like, he got injured, and then once he came back from injury, they were just like, yeah, you're not playing QB anymore, Jameis. Like, sit, ride the bench, enjoy the bench for the rest of the season. I find it hard to believe that Andy Dalton's play was so convincing that they couldn't have gotten Jameis Winston in there, like, a little bit more. But you know what? Not a lot of the decisions the New Orleans Saints made this year made a lot of sense to me. Like, we can talk about Taysom Hill when we get to the tight ends, but just the usage of Alvin Kamara, the quarterback splits, Taysom Hill either being used too much or not being used enough in some games. It's just basically every Saints decision was some of the most baffling things I've ever seen.
Yeah, the way they used Alvin Kamara this year, like, we'll get to the running backs. I had Alvin Kamara pretty high. I feel really bad about that because it was horrible. How is Andy Dalton a better, especially the way the season went, how is Andy Dalton a better option than even giving Jameis Winston a look? Makes no sense.
I'm trying to look at my running back rankings. Okay, I had Alvin Kamara just inside the top 10. I had him as the ninth QB. You had him as the fourth QB. Damn. Like, yeah, that.
I thought that was PPR Central. Alvin Kamara was going to be his nickname. Thought he was going to catch 85 balls this year. So it was horrible. It was horrible. Like, and the Jameis Winston thing, I just looked at Jameis Winston and said, okay, Michael Thomas is going to be back. They brought in Jarvis Landry. They drafted Chris Olave. Alvin Kamara is there. Like, Jameis is going to just light this up. I don't care if he throws 30 interceptions again, because he's going to throw 35 touchdowns. It's going to be fine. And then I said this to my dad yesterday, and this is kind of going off a little bit on a tangent, but it's like the conversation that the Jets are having internally about, okay, so Mike White gets hurt against the Bills. We're going to start Zach Wilson. Joe Flacco is going to be inactive. Chris Streveler is going to be the backup. Okay, he plays decent against the Lions. We're going to start him the following week, and they get their doors blown off. Joe Flacco is still inactive. So now Mike White's out for this week, but we're going to start Joe Flacco in the last week of the season. Like, what? I would love to be a fly on the wall in these conversations that these coaches have, because I actually think that they outcoach themselves sometimes, much like the Saints did with not even giving Jameis Winston a shot. Like, Andy Dalton had plenty of bad games this year that they could have said, I think we should give Jameis a shot. And they didn't. I don't get it.
Yeah, I think that's for sure a coaching thing. And I mean, I don't think anyone was going to claim that Dennis Allen, for example, was one of the best coaches in the NFL. If you're doing who are you picking to be your head coach of your brand spanking new franchise? I think Dennis Allen is, like, pretty low on that list, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm a little shocked the Saints season went the way it did. But hey, I mean, no Jameis Winston, no Andy Dalton, anywhere near the top 20. Here, I kind of wrote down some of the other names beyond Justin Herbert. So I mentioned Lamar Jackson finished as the 13th overall quarterback, 243 points. Rodgers was at 14, Tua at 15, Derek Carr at 16, Kyler Murray at 17. And I mean, obviously he got injured and tore his ACL towards the end of the season. Otherwise, he probably would have at least been in the top 12 had he not gotten injured. But then he also just had a worse year than he did last year, so maybe he wouldn't have. But still, the injury definitely knocking him out there. Marcus Mariota as the 18th QB, 205. Here's almost a hilarious statistic. Marcus Mariota finished as the 18th overall QB. Dak Prescott finished as the 19th QB, 203.88 points. Behind Mariota's 205.56 points. I don't think, yeah, you know what? I had Prescott in there as the 10th overall QB, and he finished as the 19th QB. And again, it wasn't particularly close. Like, he was almost 70 points behind Justin Herbert for the 12th spot. So just, it's funny because CeeDee Lamb had a pretty good year. Tony Pollard had a pretty good year. And I mean, a lot of Tony Pollard's good year certainly was running the football, but also being a part of the passing offense. Dalton Schultz had a pretty good year. It's almost like every skill position player, even in the end of the year, Ezekiel Elliott finished, you know, didn't have a terrible finish. At the end of it all, the only major part of the Dallas Cowboys offense that did not have a very high fantasy finish was Dak Prescott himself.
Yeah, and he did miss a few games with that finger injury, but even when he did play, like, he didn't. He was honestly, it was shocking how he didn't dominate. And yes, I know that. Amari Cooper was a bigger loss than a lot of people will give credit for. Amari Cooper ended up having a really good year Cleveland, a shocking year, actually. And so I'm very surprised at how it went for Dak Prescott, but they're going to the playoffs again. And I think that the biggest difference was the change in philosophy, and that was running the hell out of the ball instead of relying on Dak to throw the ball 40 times a night. And I think that's why we saw the dip in his fantasy numbers. It's just they found a recipe that worked. They finally gave Tony Pollard the ball more. That worked out to a top 10 fantasy finish. They finally said, we're going to lessen Zeke's workload, but we're still going to work him in, and he's still going to get his 15 carries a night. Like, those two guys were probably carrying the ball 30 times a night between the two of them. And they were using them in the short passing game as well. I think the change in philosophy was what made – I think that was also part of the loss of, hey, we don't have Amari Cooper. Michael Gallup missed a bunch of time. Dalton Schultz missed a bunch of time. So I think that change is what hindered Dak Prescott, but also made the Dallas Cowboys a more well-rounded team.
Where do you draft Dak next year? Where do you draft him? Because let's say it's a one QB league. So I think in two QB leagues, it's kind of throws things off. Guys get drafted much higher. Like, in a two QB league, it wouldn't be out of line to say that Patrick Mahomes is the number one overall pick, right? So I think let's just say it's a one QB league. I think a lot of people in one QB leagues, I find, wait on QBs. If they don't get the Jalen Hurts guys, they don't get the Patrick Mahomes, they don't get the Josh Allens, they wait until like the eighth round or something to take their QB. And I feel like that it's around there you might see someone like Dak be taken. But I mean, if he was the 19th overall pick or 19th overall QB this year in a 12 team league, you could wait, like in theory, you could wait until like the 13th round to draft Dak Prescott. That's probably unrealistic because, you know, Dak, name recognition wise, is probably getting drafted much higher than that. But it does make you wonder what the optimal draft spot for someone like Dak might be next year.
I think he's probably, for me, around like QB 13 to 15 off the board. Like, let's not forget, like, Kyler Murray's going to be coming off of an injury. Derek Carr is probably, like, guys that were drafted ahead of him. Derek Carr may not even be drafted next year. Who knows where he ends up? And then, you know, guys have jumped ahead of him, like a Daniel Jones. Kirk Cousins will get drafted ahead of him, but Matthew Stafford probably won't be. Russell Wilson probably won't be. So I've got him around, like, I want to say 15 is probably pretty safe, 13 to 15, just because I also think that the Cowboys are going to add a wide receiver this offseason, whether it be in the draft, whether it be in free agency. I think they're going to add another wide receiver to go along with CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup. And I think that's going to be what kind of pushes people to say, hey, you know, Dak is healthy. I do wonder what happens to Tony Pollard, because if Tony Pollard ends up leaving because he's a free agent as well, that's going to change their philosophy as well, that they may have to rely on Dak's arm more than they did this year. So I think QB 15 is probably pretty safe. And we've seen Dak have really good years. Like, there is a ceiling here that does scream like top eight, top five finish because of his talent.
Where do you draft Geno Smith next year? Like, does it matter what happens contract wise for him? Like, does it matter if the Seahawks don't commit to him for longer than 2 years? Like, even if they do commit to him for even just like a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal with an option in the second year or something like that, are you drafting Geno Smith still, after what you saw this year, as QB 10 or higher?
I mean, he didn't give us a reason to not think that way, but how much of Geno Smith's numbers and his finish were because of, you know, we saw Justin Herbert struggle this year. We saw Matthew Stafford got hurt. Kyler Murray didn't end up finishing the year. I think there will be other guys that push him further down the list, but I think QB 12 is probably where he ends up going. I would like to see him stay in Seattle, though, because that clearly works for him. Like, if he goes anywhere else, and I don't believe that he is, I believe that he's going to stay in Seattle. He's probably signing a 3-year deal that's fully guaranteed for probably 2 years or a year and a half or whatever the case may be. And so if he stays in Seattle, I think he's probably drafted as a top 12 to 15 quarterback, because there's also, you know, we talked about, like, Daniel Jones took a big leap this year. Daniel Jones is going to get drafted higher than he was. The same thing goes for Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And Trey Lance is going to be in that conversation as well. Yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to end up somewhere. Maybe Jimmy Garoppolo ends up in Indy. And Jimmy Garoppolo, with the offensive line that they have there, the running game, and then I would assume that the Colts are going to add a wide receiver, that they're going to have good weapons. So that's an option as well. Show, whoever is the starting quarterback for the New York Jets, if it's not Zach Wilson, is also going to be in that conversation based on their running game and their wide receiver.
Even if it's Derek Carr? Even if it's Derek Carr?
Oh, boy.
Not
Derek Carr. Man, he was so bad this year. Like, yeah, you had him 8. I had him 10. Like, he was just everything. Now, he lost Hunter Renfro. He lost Darren Waller for a large portion of the season. I mean, he did get Devontae Adams. How's Devontae Adams feeling right now? I asked for a trade. I got it to be with my buddy, and he may not even be the quarterback of this team next year. I mean, he gets to live in Vegas, so it's not horrible. But, and he's got plenty of Benjamins to stay there. But, yeah, what a disaster. I've thought about who that I would like to see as the next quarterback of the Jets. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Like, even Gardner Minshew, to me, makes a lot of sense.
Man, can you imagine?
It can't be any worse than Zach Wilson, right?
No,
like, I mean, maybe Mike White is the quarterback there next year. I doubt it, but maybe he is. But if it's someone, it's got to be somebody that gets traded there or signs there, because it's not going to be an internal candidate that gets drafted ahead.
Bring me Joe Flacco.
You know he's throwing for 400 yards today, right? Like, that is absolutely happening to knock the Dolphins out of playoff contention.
He 1,000% is.
But that's the type of thing that we're talking about here. There are options that when you look at the team and go, man, if they just had a quarterback, they'd be really good. Like, what about Washington? Like, Washington is a very good situation. They've got two really good running backs. Their offensive line is decent. They've got Curtis Samuel. They've got Terry McLaurin. They've got Jahan Dotson. That's a really nice situation if you can get a quarterback in there. So I think there are certain situations that if a decent quarterback goes in, that they maybe get drafted ahead of Geno Smith. So I think 12 to 15 is probably, in a long-winded way of answering your question, I think 12 to 15 is probably where he ends up going next year.
You mentioned the Commanders. I am so fascinated to see. And again, like, a week 18 one game audition is probably not going to be telling you the whole story about any player, much less a QB, if you want to determine if he's your guy of the future. But Sam Howell is apparently going to be starting that game for the Commanders today. And I mean, like, you might as well, right? The Commanders are not making the playoffs. You might as well see what Howell has in the tank to a certain degree, just to see if there is anything there. And I mean, if he plays even halfway well, I look forward to having the conversation with you in, like, in July and August. Should Sam Howell be the starting QB of the Washington Commanders? The answer is probably no, but I am super fascinated by that discussion. One more QB one for you before we get out of here, then we'll get to, I don't know if we'll have time to do all of the position players. Maybe we do wide receivers next and we save running backs and tight ends for next week, but because we'll have playoff games to talk about next week as well, which is a lot of fun. But my 11 overall QB, you had him in your top 12 as well. Tom Brady, 273, 30 points. And Brady, it seems pretty likely he's going to play football again next year. It also seems pretty likely that he will not be playing football for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers next year. I don't know who the Buccaneers quarterback is going to be if it's not Brady. I don't think it's Blaine Gabbert, for example. I mean, I guess there's like a non-zero chance it could be Gabbert, but I would be shocked if it was. I don't know if like Ian Book is still down there or what have you. But anyways, Brady, if he is not the QB of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he is going to be tied to basically every situation that exists, like every possible QB needy team that exists. Like, you could convince me that he's going to the Jets. You could convince me that he's going to the 49ers. You could convince me that he's going to the Patriots. And I think, to me, the one that makes the most sense are the Las Vegas Raiders, in a reunion with his former, maybe not GM, but former director of player personnel, reunion with former offensive coordinator, now head coach, and Josh McDaniels. I don't know, maybe even Jared Stidham will still be his backup again back there. I think that makes a lot of sense. If Brady goes to Vegas, do you pencil him in for another top 12 finish in 2023? Let's just say nothing else changes. Maybe they shore up that offensive line a little bit, but he now has Josh Jacobs, who was terrific this year. He now has Davante Adams, who was still pretty good this year. He has Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller, and he has Josh McDaniels scheming plays for him. Do you draft Brady as a top 12 QB?
I don't, but I think he finishes as a top 12 QB if he goes there, which is kind of backwards ass thinking, I know, but I think that certainly the weaponry is there. Like, man, a scrappy slot receiver in Hunter Renfrow. Oh, it's like recreating Wes Welker and Julian Edelman all over again. and he's got the hairline to match. And Darren Waller's there, Davante Adams. You could make the case that, well, not you could make, it is fact, outside of Randy Moss, that Davante Adams would be the best receiver that he's ever had.
Disrespect to Deion Branch. The disrespect.
Yeah, I know, honestly. So I look at, honestly, and Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady work some magic. I do believe that if he went there, it would be a top 12 finish once again for Tom Brady. And, you know, Tom Brady's numbers are largely inflated this year by the fact that he's going to break the record for most passing attempts in a season. He's thrown over 700 passes this year.
That's wild.
I'm shocked his arm hasn't fallen off. Shocked. So if he goes there, to be honest, that does make sense. I have this sneaky suspicion that it's San Francisco.
You really?
I don't know why. It's just because that's where he grew up, being a Niners fan. That's probably, idolized Joe Montana. He probably wants to try that one out again. Tom Brady is going somewhere where the weather is warm. That I can guarantee. But both of those are West Coast teams. His kids are on the East Coast. Like, I'm not so certain that either of those are going to happen, just because he does seem like, aside from his relationship, which whatever, relationships are whatever, but your kids are still your kids. And I don't think he wants to be too far away from them. So I do wonder where he does end up, or like, does he shut it down? I know they're gonna make the playoffs. They're in. I don't see them beating anybody unless they play the Cowboys, because they're definitely going to beat the Cowboys, because Tom Brady always beats the Cowboys.
He does.
But other than that, I don't see them beating anybody else. Like, they're not going to beat the Eagles. They're not going to beat like, if Green Bay gets in, I don't think they're a lock to beat Green Bay. I'm not certain that they're a lock to beat the Vikings, and I don't think that they're going to beat the Niners. So this could be a premature end to the season for Tom Brady. I wonder what he does next year.
Yeah, it's going to be, I love speculating on the Brady stuff, because obviously he's been one of the best players, if not the best player in NFL history for a long time. And he has been helping us to fantasy wins for a very long time as well. So an 11th overall QB finish for Brady does make you wonder what he would look like with, if not better weapons, different weapons next year as well. Let's take a very quick break. When we come back, we will wrap up the last segment of the fantasy show. Let's do wide receivers. Let's save running backs and tight ends for next week, and we'll do wide receivers to wrap things up, because there were, especially in half PPR, Matt, there were so many ways you could go with this, And there were a lot of interesting additions to the top 12, including two pairs of teammates making it in to the top 12, which is fascinating to me. So we'll get to wide receivers and their 2022 finishes next on the Fantasy Show. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Segment to go on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you this week 18 as the NFL at large gets ready for the last game of the regular season. The Chiefs beat the Raiders last night and the Jacksonville Jaguars locked up the AFC South with a very exciting win over the Tennessee Titans last night as well. So those four teams have already done for week 18, but still plenty more action this week. If you do have some questions on the People's Text Line, 590-590 is where you can reach us. Like I always say, friends don't let friends play championships in Week 18, although the extenuating circumstances of Week 17 probably does mean that some of you are unfortunately playing in Week 18. I actually do see a couple of text line questions here, Matt, so why don't we get to one last time in the 2022 season, get to the People's Text Line.
And now, your fantasy questions on the People's Text Line.
So again, you guys know the drill, 590-590, name and location. Actually, it's just a couple of texts here because, like I said, I think most people are either done for the week, Matt, or they are, they've either lost or won or whatever. For a lot of people, the season is likely over. But I see two here. I'm going to read the first one. It's not really a question. It's just a comment. This one's from Cuba in Toronto. I think he had texted this in when I said there were no texts like about 30 minutes ago. But he says, sorry, show, put $500 on the Jags to win the division back in August. So I've been pumping the brew for the last 12-ish hours. Hey, good for you for betting that kind of cheese, because $500 on the Jags to win in August. I mean, I don't know what the odds were back then, but I got to imagine.
They were plus 700, Joe, because I did a show with our buddy Brent Gunning.
Okay.
And he also picked the Jags to win the division because we were going over the betting odds, and he had plus 700, I believe.
Good for you for remembering.
So that is good coin. Good coin.
How much is that? Like, if you bet $500, is that like several thousand dollars? Like, what's the math on that?
I think
that?
It's, I want to say that it's $3,500.
Right. Okay.
Right. But it could be more. Like, I'm not good with the odds. So, but I can look that up.
No, it's okay. I put you in a bad spot. Okay. Shouldn't have asked you to do math on the air. That's like my cardinal rule. Never do math on the air. But no, I think Austin says it's around $3,500. So, I trust him.
Yeah,
Austin is a degen like you are. So I believe he's right. But hey, Cuba, congratulations, man. Imagine betting a large sums of money on the Jags and like feeling confident about it, much less actually having it come through. Congratulations. That's a huge win. You should text that to George at 960-960 because he loves hearing those kinds of wins. So I strongly recommend you send George a text at 960-960. The other one I wanted to get to, though, FaZe from Peterborough, who texts in every week. FaZe says, "A Fields and Lamar Jackson weren't playing this week, so he ended up with Trevor Lawrence. I need three wide receivers from Diggs, A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, and Keenan Allen. Also RB2 between Kenneth Walker or Cam Akers. The final has been extended to two-week total points because of last week, assuming... I know FaZe has Diggs and so on, so I remember... I have a feeling it has to do with the Bills-Bengals thing. Thanks for all your help throughout the season. Great advice. So we're picking three wide receivers between those four stacked names and then one running back between Kenneth Walker and Cam Akers, Matt.
FaZe always puts us on the spot because he's got such a good team.
He does have a really good team.
At this point, he doesn't need our help very much. But, man, do I kind of feel like I want to go with Cam Akers for the running back between him and Kenneth Walker, because Cam Akers has just been so good. Diggs, A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, and Keenan Allen. I think I'm going to roll with CeeDee Lamb. I'm going to go with the first three. I'm going to go A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, and Keenan Allen. Diggs, A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb. That's what I'm going with.
You're benching Keenan Allen, essentially.
I am.
And you're benching Kenneth Walker.
Yeah, because I believe the first three teams, so Bills, Eagles, and
Cowboys
are all playing for something this week, are they not? Whereas I think the Chargers are locked into where they are.
I believe the Chargers are locked in. I mean, all four teams are making the playoffs. Like the Bills, Eagles, Cowboys, Chargers are all making the playoffs. So they're all in spots. But I think you're right. I think the Chargers are locked into a specific matchup, whereas the Bills could, in theory, move around. Because the question for me on Diggs is, we know more than a lot of players that Diggs, he kind of like wears his emotions on his sleeve. And that, and this is, there's like no way to possibly quantify this. There's no way you can quantify this, okay? But Diggs is a good friend of Damar Hamlin. And I do kind of wonder how much you trust the emotional aspect of having someone who is close to the situation. I mean, they're all close to the situation, but someone who is close to the situation go out there and want to dominate for his friend. Again, there's no way you could possibly quantify that, but I honestly do wonder how you factor those kinds of things in.
I think that that's valid, especially with this. I do believe that he ends up balling out, because he hasn't. He also, in the two previous games, like, he wasn't great either. So the show, I know you're a Patriots fan. I think that the Bills win by 30 today. I honestly
you're probably
do
right.
Believe
honestly,
that.
You're probably right.
So, and I think that the Bills, especially the offense. The defense too, because Damar Hamlin was the starting safety. I think this is a blowout. I think Stephon Diggs absolutely goes off. And it could be a situation like a couple of years ago when the Bills absolutely demolished the Dolphins. They scored like 56 points in the last week and Josh Allen had four touchdowns at the half. I think that's what we're kind of looking at this week. And Diggs is going to be a big part of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know some people had the question as to whether or not the Bills would rest starters. And I think, like, if the game is out of hand by the second half, they might. But generally speaking, I do think you're right. I think the Bills are going to go out there and make a statement today. And, I mean, the Patriots have a good defense. I think I feel comfortable saying that. But, I mean, if the Bills go out there and, like, really try and really, really go for a win here in Week 18, I don't think there are a lot of teams that could keep up with them, especially on offense. So, yeah, I think I'm with you with that one. So you go Diggs, Brown, Lamb, Akers. And I tend to agree with you. I think they're going to just run Akers into the ground as much as they humanly possibly can, because, like we talked about earlier, a lot of changes likely coming next year for the Rams. And Keenan Allen, probably, I'm not sure you want to rely on Keenan Allen if the Chargers don't have a lot to play for. That kind of ties into this next one here. We'll get to one more question. Judy from Calgary, should I start Barkley today? Saquon Barkley, it's a half PPR league. I say no, because the Giants have literally nothing to play for. And Barkley has been great this season. Don't get me wrong. Like, he has been phenomenal in 2022. I'm very happy he seems to be back. I have a feeling he's going to win Comeback Player of the Year. There are a couple of players you could give this award to if you're going solely off of their 2022 offensive performances. But Barkley, great. But I think it just remains that he has a pretty long injury history. And I had to look it up while you were talking. He has 371 touches already this season. It is the most touches he has had in a season since he was a rookie. So I have a feeling the Giants, with absolutely nothing to play for, I don't know if you really want to risk someone like the health of someone like Saquon Barkley when you can just, again, not to be like flippant about it, but when you can just throw out like Gary Brightwell or Matt Breida, who both had a season high in carries last week.
Yeah, Daniel Jones, I don't believe, is playing this week either. Like, they promoted Davis Webb from the practice squad, so I don't see a situation where Daniel Jones is playing. And if that's the case, I don't. If Saquon Barkley plays, he maybe plays a half, but even that, I don't even see happening. I would wait for the inactives lists, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I that's the thing. I don't really see it happening either. Again, like, I would love to say yes, because I think I've just really, generally speaking, enjoyed watching Saquon play this season. So I, but still, in week 18, nothing to play for. You might be, honestly, it's terrible to say this in week 18, but for championship weekend, you might be better just like picking someone up off of waivers than trusting Saquon Barkley. But I don't see any of the texture. So that does it for the people's text line for one last time in week 18. But still, I mean, look, if you have questions on a general sense about other things, you can always text us at 590-590 and we'll get to those. Again, we're basically here, Matt, until the end of, I think, the Super Bowl, either the week of the Super Bowl, like the morning of the game, or the week after. And then that's probably it for us until midsummer, I would think, right? Like there, we'll probably get back and do some mock drafts, do some other things as well, because I'm very much looking forward to what the offseason has in store free agency wise and draft wise. But for the most part, I don't think there's going to be a lot of like fantasy baseball week to week basis type stuff from us.
Not from me. That I can promise you.
Are you going to be in any fantasy baseball leagues this year?
No, I will not. Okay. I will not. I'm in two fantasy hockey leagues, and that's a bit of a stretch for me.
Because I was going to throw out to everyone, if you want to do a fantasy baseball league, we can make a fantasy show, fantasy baseball league happen. I don't know, Austin, are you like a fantasy baseball guy? Like are you shaking your head? I can't tell if you are.
I'll play anything show.
You will? Okay, yeah. That's true. He's a D-gen, like I said.
That is the most.
Let's get the NASCAR D-gen league going, boys.
You guys, we have a fantasy inter-county baseball league. I'm in, guys.
Let's do it. XFL league, I'm in. Let's do the XFL league.
Can I say CFL or...
You can, but nobody's listening to it. So,
that's pretty funny. Okay, all right. Well, look, I think there is room. We're not going to be doing the week to week fantasy show during the baseball season, but I do genuinely think there is room for a listener league for fantasy baseball. You can get away with larger leagues in fantasy baseball as well. So maybe like a 12 or a 14 team league. So hey, if you are interested in that, between now and the Super Bowl, you can text us and let us know, and I'll get your information. And we can sign you up for a fantasy baseball league. Are you going to participate if we do that though, Marchese?
I can't keep track of my kid every day, let alone a fantasy baseball team.
All right, fair enough.
I'd have to think about it, but I would lean no, because I think if I joined another league, like I'm not telling my wife that I'm joining another dynasty league, because I'm pretty sure she'd have a conniption. If I told her I was joining a fantasy baseball league, she'd say why. Secondly, I would probably be filing. So it might not be a good thing.
It's funny. We probably don't have enough time to do the wide receivers. We'll save those for next week now. But I'll say this: when I was sitting on the couch last night watching the end of Jags Titans, and I basically I watched the second half onwards, and when the Jags defense forced the turnover on Dobbs, and the defense returned their ball for a touchdown, and that ended up being the game clinching TD. It was, I got up my couch and yelled, and my wife was like, "Oh, you're so much happier now that the fantasy season is over." And you know what? It's so true. Like, despite winning a title, I gotta say, like the stress-free watch of watching an NFL game was delightful. I couldn't even begin to describe to you how much I enjoyed watching an NFL game without like getting up to yell at my TV, like, "Give the ball to ETN! Give the ball to ETN one more time! I need one more carry from Travis!" You know what I mean? Like, I'm so happy we don't have to deal with that anymore, Matt.
Just do what I do and just gamble on the games, and then you can get mad at the TV again, all over again. Like, I'm gonna go and play stupid bets today on week 18 of the NFL season. Because it's in my nature to be stupid. Clip that. And like last night,
he's already doing it.
I know he is. Me and my big mouth. I had a same game parlay on the Titans and the Jags last night, and I was like, this game is absolutely going over. It's going to be a slugfest. You know, one team's going to score 30, the other team's going to score 27. I even teased down the over. I'm like, I'll even buy myself a couple of points on this parlay. I said, Derrick Henry, he's been so good against the Jags. He had like 8 touchdowns in his last 4 games against the Jags. I was like, he's definitely going to score 2. So he didn't even score 1. Josh Dobbs did not get to his yardage total. Trevor Lawrence did not get to his yardage total. But hey, I had Evan Ingram right on his receptions, and I had Derrick Henry right on his yardage total. And hey, Josh Dobbs threw a touchdown, so I got that one right. The rest, complete and utter trash. Speaking of complete and utter trash, how about that first game yesterday?
That was not fun.
Yeah. I thought the Raiders were going to put up a little bit more of a fight than they did. And I knew that my bet in that game turned when the Raiders got down to the KC2 and could not score. That was it for me. I'm like, well, that was fun while it lasted. And then I went to coach my hockey team. So I didn't have to endure the whole thing, but my God, it was painful.
Hey, where do you draft Travis Kelce next year? Because he's going to be 34 next year. And he had a very, very, very good fantasy season. Like, we'll talk about this next week, but the difference between Travis Kelce and the second tight end was, who I believe ended up as TJ Hockenson, was still a pretty large gap, right? Like the gap between Kelce and Hockenson was like 70 something points, when, which is pretty remarkable considering the gap between like the fifth tight end and like the 15th tight end was like, I don't know, 20 points essentially, right? So I think that's a pretty remarkable gap. But still, another year older for Travis Kelce, obviously still going to be pretty heavily involved in whatever goes on in KC, whether it's through scheming with Andy Reid and the clearly the favorite target of Patrick Mahomes. But a year older, does that give you any pause at all? Or you're still taking him, like, again, let's say at the turn? Because one of my, I think in one of my leagues, I don't know which one, but in one league next year, I am going to try the strategy of drafting Mahomes and Kelce. Like, Kelce as my first round pick, and then Mahomes as my first QB, just so I have that Mahomes-Kelce stack all season. And it'll probably work out more often than it doesn't, but I'm curious where age being a factor factors into how much or how highly you draft someone like Kelce.
To be honest with you, it's not even the age that's the issue for me. It's just, it's what he's done, like, and I know this is so revisionist history and you know, and even a little bit of recency bias, but over the course of the last 3 weeks, like, Travis Kelce has not really been very, like, he's been TE4, and that's TE4 is still really good, yes, but like, Tyler Higbee has a higher points per game over that time, yes, granted, three touchdowns helped that, but I mean, there's the concern of the last 3 weeks is what has it for me, because maybe teams have just looked at it and said, we're going to take Kelce away. Just beat us with, you know, beat us with Juju Smith-Schuster, or Marquez Valdes-Scantling, or beat us with your run game. And it seemingly worked, but is Travis Kelce going to have his boom weeks next year? Absolutely. Am I going to take him at the turn? Probably not. Like, TJ Hockenson has fit really well in Minnesota. Mark Andrews' draft capital is going to take a hit. So he's going to fall down draft boards a little bit as well. I would honestly just rather wait. Like, I think Pat Freiermuth, who ended up finishing as tight end 7 on the year, ends up taking a step forward as well. I think Dallas Goedert, we saw what Dallas Goedert did when he was healthy this year. And Dallas Goedert was an absolute stud. So I think his draft capital goes up because people trust Jalen Hurts. So I'm not willing to spend the draft capital if I believe that there's going to be inconsistencies there, because generally speaking, over the course of the last 5 years or 4 years, whatever it is, Travis Kelce has been as consistent as any player in the NFL, not just tight end, any player. Like, there was, I believe Travis Kelce last year would have finished as like wide receiver 3 or 4.
He would have been wide receiver four this year. He would have, like, it would have, okay. Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams all finished ahead of him, but he would have finished ahead of AJ Brown, Stephon Diggs, CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, Mike Evans. Like, take your pick. He basically only finished behind Jefferson, yeah. Hill, Adams.
So, and that's why, like, that's the allure. But for me, what I've seen the last 3 weeks has not been the consistent Travis Kelce. I don't think he's gotten into the end zone. I just think that teams just said, we're just going to scheme against him. And if more teams decide to do that, I think you're going to see more of those, you know, a down week by Travis Kelce standards. I think you might see those a little bit more often. Does that mean that I'm not going to draft him at all? No. If I see value there, maybe somewhere later in the second round, I would consider it. But I don't think I can justify taking him at the turn anymore.
There you have it, everyone. Matt Marchese thinks Travis Kelce is a bust. That's what he said.
And we're only going to clip you saying that.
Oh,
my good. Nature to be stupid.
It's true. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So good. Hey, Austin, put that into a hotkey, man. We're gonna be hammering that for the rest of the season, no matter what.
What about all my good takes? Come on, man.
What good takes?
The Taysom Hill over Mark Andrews take was one of my favorites. Or the Peyton Hendershot is gonna score a touchdown this week.
The Peyton Hendershot, Noah Brown thing, I think is the my favorite thing we've done, just because, like, you just know that is like the epitome of fantasy football. That is fantasy football in a nutshell. But Anyways, it's been a lot of fun this season. If you've been listening alongside us, we've really appreciated it. Again, you can reach the show anytime, 590-590. We're here until basically the end of the Super Bowl, so we'll be back next weekend. Best of luck to those of you who are participating in their Week 18 Fantasy Football Championships. We'll get more into the top 12 rankings for wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends next week. And, of course, we have playoff football to talk about next weekend as well. So for Matt, for Austin, best of luck in your Week 18 championships. We'll talk to you next weekend on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.